This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, strap on a jetpack of language. Coming up in today's show, the future is now! But also coming up, how does that work? What an infernal phrase, eh? On with the show.
I couldn't say this to most people, but you probably understand getting obsessed with a phrase where you're like, what is this thing that we say that is weird? And the one that I've been obsessed with for a while is the future is now.
This is Rose Eveleth. She makes the podcast Flash Forward about how certain scenarios might play out in the future, which may or may not be now.
I tend to use it most ironically, where like you see something dumb with technology and you're like, oh, the future is now. Like, oh, an internet connected toaster. Oh, the future is now.
Social network for dogs.
Exactly. Yes. Right. And but other people, I think, use it much more straightforwardly and much more non-ironically, which is like, oh, things are happening so quickly. The future is upon us. You know, things are changing really rapidly. The future is sort of always happening right in front of us. You know, technology is amazing. There are two ways to say the future is now, right? Like you can say it optimistically. You could be like, the future is now. Isn't that cool? Or you could be like, the future is now and we're totally screwed. So I have a TweetDeck column that just is for that phrase, the future is now, just to like watch what people are saying. School buses with Wi-Fi, the future is now. The U.S. Forest Service, I think it was, tweeted about a virtual cattle fence saying the future is now.
First time capturing a black hole in a photo. The future is now. A 1 minute salad maker. The future is now. Phone with rotating camera. The future is now.
Another one is about a guy tweeting about laser weapons being tested, I think in Alabama, being like, the future is now. A lot of them are laser related. I feel like anything involving lasers, like the future is now.
Lasers have been around since 1960, so
right.
The 1960s are now. Cheating a fingerprint scanner with silicon fingertip covers, the future is now. Automatic sperm extractor for donors who don't want to masturbate in a hospital setting. The future is now.
I just paid all my bills while taking a shit. The future is now, my people. But yeah, it comes up everywhere. There's a song by The Offspring called The Future Is Now. There's a song by Future called The Future Is Now.
It's always now for Future himself.
Exactly.
When am I? Right now.
Here it is.
Always.
Oh, and now again. And now again. So it kind of ranges, right, from people who are genuinely marveling at technology all the way to people who are paying their bills while sitting on the toilet. And so that's the phrase, and I'm sort of obsessed with it, in part because it does perform all these different functions, right? It can be used ironically, it can be used sincerely, it can be used in all these different ways, and I say it all the time because I think it's really funny.
Going back to the past for a moment, it's hard to identify exactly where and when the phrase originated.
There is a football coach who claims to have invented the phrase. His name is George Allen. 1989, he did an interview with USA Today. He was talking about how long it was going to take for his team, which was Long Beach State, football team, to be ready to play. And he says, quote, by my third year, we should be competitive, but that's a long time to wait because I'm the guy who coined the phrase, the future is now.
Weird flex.
Yeah, it is weird. It's weird. I mean, he's like a football coach. Like, I think they all have weird flexes. That's part of the game.
George Allen probably wasn't the one to invent the phrase, unless some 50 years prior to making this claim, he posed as someone named Ernest M. Ligon and wrote a book published in 1940 titled Their Future Is Now, The Growth and Development of Christian Personality.
It's not really about technology, it's not really about the future, but he uses this phrase in the intro to the book where he says, parents look upon their children and dream of their future. What they so often fail to realize is that their future is now. And so that's a really early example. And I haven't found that many examples of it before that 1940 book, but I suspect it probably was used before then. There's a 1955 short documentary called The Future Is Now, where it is really being used in the way that we're talking about in terms of technology. It's actually really amazing. It sort of shows like scientists, you know, working in their labs and developing computers and the atomic bomb and like all of this stuff.
Classic scientists.
A new language has come into currency. To the public, it is a language of the future. To the scientist, a language of the present. This, then, is a report on our present future. Some of it profound, some of it mere gadgetry.
And that's kind of an early use. There's 1957, the University of Michigan releases a report called The Future Is Now about the University of Michigan. So that's kind of around when you start to see it pop up more and more.
Why do you reckon that was?
I think, so the 1950s and 1960s are like a golden age of science fiction, right? You start to get very specific images of what the future is going to look like. And there is kind of a lot of gilded, like, oh, everything's going to be so cool and we're going to have flying cars. You have all of these companies putting out these promotional videos. In 1956, Design for Dreaming, which is a General Motors advertisement, comes out, which if you have not seen, I actually highly recommend watching because it is so weird and so interesting. It's also a musical.
And now, a glamorous dancer in a special number, Dance of Tomorrow.
Everyone says the future is strange, but I have a feeling some things won't change.
And there's like a woman and she's singing and then she's like whisked away in a dream to like this big car show. And there's a moment where she faints because she's so excited about all the cars and she's whisked back into the kitchen because that's where she belongs.
The kitchen of tomorrow is calling me. My cake is ready.
So there's like a lot of things going on in this musical advertisement for General Motors. A lot of the stuff that we think of now when we think about like retrofuturism, like all of those sort of classic images of flying cars in these cities and that kind of aesthetic all sort of come from the 50s and early 60s. So you start to have that idea of the future, this progress. And so I think that's why the phrase takes off, because there's this idea that like, oh, you know, now that we're sort of out of the war, we can just really commit to like being as inventive as possible. All this innovation is going to accelerate. And that kind of has continued to this day, this idea that like innovation is accelerating really rapidly. Everything is changing really quickly. You know, we have all this innovation. It's constantly on top of us. And we can't even get used to all the progress that's happening because it's happening so quickly. And that is what feeds into this idea of the future is now.
Was that when the phrase got more attached to technology than to, say, Christianity or other things?
I mean, there are some variations on the phrase, right? Their future is now, our future is now, your future is now. Those get used in the 40s and early 50s more on the like self-help side of things or the Christian side of things. And then in like the mid-50s, you start to see it used for technology. And then since then, that's really been the main way that it's used is on the tech side of things, you know, forgetting the sports angle for a bit. And so, I think that part of that is the infiltration of like technology and this idea of progress and technology as sort of ubiquitous and also as sort of inherently American. And that's where it really takes off in the US, at least.
It's funny that the notion of flying car is still decades later one we can be using to indicate an amazing future.
Right. We're not really that much closer to a flying car. The flip side of the phrase, the future is now, right, is that thing that people complain about where they'll say, where's my jetpack, right? Or like, where's my flying car? You know, the future is often presented as this amazing place full of, right, things like flying cars and jetpacks and stuff like that. And the future we got is not necessarily what that 1950s future was promising us. So I think you're seeing it more ironically now than you did in the past. More and more people are saying things like, I'm paying my bills while on the toilet. The future is now. As opposed to saying with this sort of wide-eyed enthusiasm, like, wow, you know, like, look at what's happening. I mean, there is still obviously that. But I think that the biggest change I've seen is, just being used more ironically or being used more as like a parody, almost to really mean like, I wanted a jetpack and I got paying bills on the toilet. The things that we thought the future was going to deliver didn't pan out.
Do you think the way that people talk about the future has shifted? Because in the 60s, it might be really shiny.
Yeah.
And now it's often dystopian, arid earth and us being brains in jars with robot overlords.
Yeah, totally. The way that we talk about the future definitely changes over time. And lots of people have written about how the science fiction that an era produces is more reflective of that time than of the future, right? For a while, you get fear of like nuclear war, right, during certain times. And now we're getting fear, I think, reflected in like climate change and people are worried about the end of the world on that side of things. So you're seeing people think about the future as a different kind of place depending on where you are and what time period you're in. It hasn't always been the case that humans have thought the future would be different than the present. For large swaths of human history, what you experience in your generation is basically the same as what your parents experienced and what your kids will experience. The way you live and the things that happen aren't that different across generations. So for a long time, this idea of the future as being inherently different and like this separate, strange, unpredictable place wasn't true for a lot of human history, right? You woke up, you hunted and gathered, you went to sleep, like it just not that much changed. You didn't move around that much. Nations did not rise and fall. Like there are lots of things that just sort of were the same.
Or if nations did rise and fall, you might just not have known about it.
Right, exactly, right. So there's actually kind of a debate within history about like when the future becomes a thing that we think about as fundamentally and inherently different from today. Some people think that that happened in the Victorian era, when you had the Industrial Revolution and you had people really truly moving from sort of a small scale community, more agrarian, into big cities. And that's really where you start to see the rise of like a fear of the future and a fear of change and this idea that things moving too quickly is bad, and that it might hurt us. There were people who thought that trains actually moved too quickly and would like hurt the human body because we were moving too quickly through space. Like this idea that speed is actually terrifying and horrible and scary. Which is sort of, I think, then leads us into future shock, this idea that progress is happening so quickly that we can't keep up and we're all like freaking out all the time. That's why I think the future is now is an interesting phrase, because it sort of solidifies this idea that like when we talk about the future, when we're using that phrase, we're really talking about a pretty short scale thing, but that is predicated on change, that like the future is now means that it's happening right now and it's changing quickly.
Every time you say it, if you believe in linear time, it is technically true.
Right.
That the future is now by the time you've got to the end of the sentence.
Correct. Yeah.
One problem I have with the phrase, which is probably that I'm just thinking about it too literally, is that it's a contradiction in terms. If it's now, then it can't be the future.
Mm. Yeah. Right. I mean, I think isn't that like the joke? You thought you had time to adapt and get ready, but you don't, old man.
Yeah, it's a joke-ish. It's just not a top quality joke.
But I mean, it does like reflect a certain amount of hubris. I think what you're getting at is like this idea that this doesn't even really make sense to say, but it is used as a way to be like, we're so powerful. The future is now. When like, in fact, that doesn't make any sense.
Do you think it makes people feel comforted to behave like they can describe the future?
Absolutely.
So is that why some people say the future is now? They're like, the future's now. I can handle it. Look at me handling it. This is it. Nothing more's going to happen.
I think it's more like the future is now and look how great the future is. It's all going to be okay. We're all going to be fine because there are smart people who are committed to solving these problems. And they've invented a digital cow fence. We're all going to be fine because there are smart people on the case. I think is like more what that tends to signify to me than like it's handled and we don't have to worry. Nothing more is going to happen. But yeah, I think it's a similar feeling of like, if the future is now, I can understand what's happening now. If the future is some tomorrow that I can't actually see and touch, then it's scarier. I just want to fondle the future.
Rose Eveleth can be heard fondling the future in her podcast, Flash Forward. Find it at flashforwardpod.com and at all the pod places. She also writes for Wired and Motherboard. And coming up in today's Mini-Illusionist, she shares what she's been learning about the futurist movement. I just looked up futurism. It says an artistic movement that arose in Italy in 1909 to replace traditional aesthetic values with the characteristics of the machine age.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting that future is so often associated with machinery.
Right. The Italian futurists were an art movement that really embraced disruption and movement and speed and like airplanes. They were obsessed with airplanes and they really valued, you know, youth over experience and this idea of like disruption, which I don't know if any of this sounds familiar to you in terms of what's happening right now. But this was like 1918-ish, and they put out this manifesto, which is amazing. I don't know if you've ever read the Italian Futurist Manifesto, but it is incredible. It is written by a poet who has a flair for language. This version of futurism was driven by these artists in Italy, and they were fascists and loved fascism, just really loved it.
It was the style of the time.
Yeah, and this idea that like progress at any cost, they really were super stoked about the bombing of Tripoli because it was the first air bombing in history. And so to them, that was like an incredible innovation. And the fact that you were also just like bombing the shit out of people like didn't really matter to them. And, you know, you see people similarly like praising drones because they're like really amazing innovations when they're being used to kill civilians. Today's technologists should maybe take a lesson from the way that Italian futurism turned into fascism, because it's a slippery slope in terms of being like, yeah, innovation is a pure good and we should make sure that nothing stops invention. And like this idea of like disruption as a natural and important and very good thing. And there are very clear parallels between the two. And like the earlier one led directly to fascism. So like maybe we should think about this a little more deeply.
Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is
Alma Cantar, noun, astronomy, a circle of altitude parallel to the horizon, or an instrument for determining a star's passage across an Alma Cantar. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, with Rose Eveleth of Flash Forward. Thanks to Lee Vinsel. The music is by Martin Austwick. Hear his songs at palebirdmusic.com. Seek out Allusionist Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and hear every episode or read a transcript. Find out more about each topic, see the full dictionary entries of the randomly selected words at the show's forever home, theallusionist.org.